Manufacturing consent. By what means? Originally written by Evelyn Grant on 22nd of April 2021 for the Anti-Politics Substack. I will say that this is the first piece published on the Anti-Politics Substack. I'm sure that most of you at some point have come across the phrase popularized by Noam Chomsky and Edward Herman. It is the title to a work in which a description of what they refer to as the propaganda model is given, and its effects on American society. However, little of this relates to what I feel is the more adequate approach to answering the question. If consent is manufactured, then by what means and methods are involved in the process? And what from this can we use in our own understanding of the world around us and how to engage with it effectively? The glaringly obvious answer to me is technology, and not just Dominion voting machines or skewed advertisements, but the very ideology and managerial techniques that are required to facilitate engagement with a multicultural mass populace. The necessity for such managerial techniques purely exists as a coping mechanism for those whose common interest is the accumulation and sustaining of power through public perception. This is carried out via masquerading the faults of centralization behind complex and gate-kept language, which purports to help in the never-ending struggle for panaceas such as equality, inclusion, and safety. This then begins a totalizing process aptly described by Samuel T. Francis, to quote, "Neither control of the economy, nor of the state, nor of the culture by itself will establish its controlling group as the dominant elite of society," end quote. Whereas Francis generalizes these techniques under the umbrella of managerialism, I think it is better framed as the use of technology, as there must exist an underlying infrastructure through which these techniques can be applied. Technology in this framing becomes a synthesis of both the physical technology referred to frequently by Ted Kaczynski and the managerial techniques identified by the likes of Burnham and Francis. This synthesis can be easily understood once you begin to see complex abstraction, high-level theoretical constructs, and ideology as a form of mental technology that requires development like physical technology, and that they functionally perform the same role as one another and originate from the same place. This will become important later. Both of these things are then ultimately an extension of human knowledge and understanding, which in turn are all needed to keep up the facade of government by consent. One of the most insidious higher-level constructs is democracy, a mental technology required to hide the true nature of any monopolizing coercive agency, as it subsumes and reconstructs as much of any society as it can, and as a new round of plunderers arrive on the scene. This phenomenon is known to many and identified clearly in Hans Hermann Hoppe's writing, to quote, "For a minority cannot lastingly rule a majority solely by brute force. It must rule by opinion." Underwritten within this is the notion that public opinion is at the least manipulated, if not entirely fabricated. Universal suffrage helps to further legitimize this fabrication by fueling each and every individual voter into thinking that their choice matters and will be reflected in the way in which their nation will be ruled in future. What is clearly shown above is the formulation and innovation of a technology, and it generally serves those elites currently in power or those looking to overthrow existing power structures through the circulation of elites. From this, it begins to appear obvious why institutions like academia, think tanks, and cutting-edge multinational corporations must be policed and centralized. In a better sense, this process is once again identified by Hoppe in regards to intellectuals. It is thus important that you secure their loyalty to the state. Put differently, you must become a monopolist. The less of a chance that those outside of the state and current circles have to develop both physical and mental technology, the less effective they can be in coordinating public opinion. This then lessens the ability of outside groups to manufacture consent and their own sense of sovereignty in regards to shaping the world around them. Without the recognition of the techno-monopoly, the issues inherent in any new innovation are harder to hide and therefore do not come to fruition, as they must fight against a pre-existing mass opinion in regards to prior innovations and the systems used to propagate them. Mental technologies like democracy help to serve the elites of a society in the same way that the proliferation of physical technology can create a dependency on infrastructure. This is the process that elites actively want to engage in, as it further entraps the mass populace into a reliance upon these systems. Even though these systems on both a physical and mental level are imperfect, they still facilitate the need for further innovation, as each implementation of a complex innovation shows signs of failure elsewhere or creates some variant of social strife through the implementation within mass society itself. At this point, a self-perpetuating process comes into being, as each new development requires a patchwork of adjacent solutions. This requires a larger portion of society to come into the fold and no longer just be subject to technological developments, but become part of the process that on a basic level plays a part in the sustaining of the technological system. This perpetuates the illusion of being part of the process and somehow a necessary component of keeping the machine of innovation turning. A further side effect of this is then the assumption of responsibility on the part of those who play little to no essential role in enforcement of these innovations, other than accepting their usage, leaving them not only feeling guilty and responsible in a situation whereby some inherent flaw in an innovation goes awry, but then ultimately even more dependent on the same system, and leaving the elites instituting said technology unaccountable. One minor aspect that Chomsky et al. Did address in their work was the need for media, and more importantly, mass media, as an integral component for effective propaganda. Yet, there is still a higher level to this unnoticed by most. Ted Kaczynski explains plainly what this higher level effect is in terms of learned helplessness. To quote, "Much of modern technology serves to minimize the effort that we have to make in order to accomplish things, and thus drastically reduces the benefit we get from the experience of exercising control, even in life and death matters," end quote. This statement is then further elucidated by the demonstration that the simplification of acquiring basic necessities required for a fruitful life via mass food production and centralized food security removes us from the harsh realities of performing these functions and the true knowledge required to take matters into our own hands and shape the world around us. This very same argument could be applied to ideological structures and their proliferation in mass media. The application of power and its brutish nature is masked behind the niceties of emotive and heavily simplified worldviews fed to us day in, day out. We are removed from the truth of what is functionally going on by a mystical language that makes us content with the current situation as it is deemed correct to see the world through the hegemonic managerial lens of ideology. This lulls us into a false sense of security or into learned helplessness, that all is well while simultaneously accepting that we need not apply any genuine and strenuous energy to change the world around us. This then necessitates the development of mental technologies by the elite to underhandedly assert their dominance. Sam Francis also picks up on this necessity for mental technology and further innovation to simplify through thought processes in regard to, once again, democracy. To quote, "The increasing democratization of a state in the late 19th century and the early 20th century, and the increasing participation of the mass populace in formal political process, did not appreciably modify the emergence of a new managerial elite in government, and in fact, assisted its emergence and acquisition of power." End quote. Within this statement, it is implied that the development of democratic ideas was a conscious and deliberate effort, the effects of which were more than likely understood by its implementers. It creates a comforting dissonance within the minds of the average man. He is fully aware that his vote on its own is meaningless and makes no change to the world. But given the simplicity and detachment from the process, he openly accepts that due to each having supposedly their own equal say in regards to the structure of the world around them, that this is the best solution, as it avoids having to seriously consider or engage in politics, power, and ultimately violence. Learned helplessness takes over, and the individual in question is open to accepting and relying on further simplification and detachment. It then becomes even more clear that the process of manufacturing consent does not originate in the propagandizing to convince the populace of one line of argument or another, but it is part of a wider, all-encompassing process to simplify the world we live in and ultimately nullify any impetus to make us an effective change in both the physical space of how we interact with the world around us and the mental space of how we perceive the world around us. These effects go hand in hand and require one another to become anything worthwhile to those who wish to exercise power over society. Both the physical technology of infrastructure and the mental technology of ideology would grant no power or sway in society without their symbiosis. How to combat this symbiosis, however, will be a subject for a later piece. Thank you for listening. That was, again, the first article ever written on the Anti-Politics Substack by Evelyn. And I will say the point at the end is very salient there, that people must believe in power structures for them to be real. It's a hard thing to grasp sometimes, but there's a large disconnect between where people think power lays and where power does lie. And that's something we've elucidated on in our later work. If you do want to support us, please do subscribe to the Anti-Politics Substack. You can do so in any paid manner, or you can support us via the Ko-fi link down below. These do take quite a lot of work, both to write and to record, so any kind of support is appreciated as it allows us to dedicate more time to these.